do they?
Today, my friends, we're going to learn about a makeover.
A makeover?
Mm. Or at least a makeup. Mm. Or the makeup mirrors.
Clarins, all the stuff. What page should I miss?
It starts 567.
Uh-huh. Yesterday was 567. Today it's 72.
Today we're going to talk about the fashioning of the kier. So if you go to chapter 38, where we start to hear about the mizbeach, which is made of copper, and then when we finished hearing about the mizbeach, which is made of copper, which goes from the beginning of chapter 38 till the end of chapter 7, we hear about the badim, we hear about the staves of the mizbeach, we hear about the way the mizbeach was fashioned in a hollow way. Then after that, the Torah says, "Vayas eis hakir," they made the wash basin. The wash basin was made nechoshes. It was made out of copper. Ve'es kanei, and its base. Also, this too was made nechoshes. What's the problem? Chapter 38? No, verse 8. I told you, verse 1 through 7 talks about the outer mizbeach. Verse 8 speaks about the wash basin. Pasuk ches. And here the Torah tells us something unbelievable. So far everything is like run-of-the-mill. Yeah, we heard about this. A wash basin made of copper. Okay, very nice. Mm-hmm. Now the Torah comes along and says, "B'mareis hatzeveis ashatzovu pesach el mayed," with these makeover mirrors, makeup mirrors, which the woman had gathered at the door of the tent of meeting. And so we obviously don't know what's going on over here. Why is the Torah telling us what these materials were used for prior? I mean, after all, it goes to the Beis HaMikdash. It doesn't matter what was used for before. It's true that we heard about some of the gold ornamentations. We heard about some of the things that they were used for. But here, we're hearing about mirrors. It's the first time we hear about something which is detailed, which is not of gold, nor anything about the silver, only about the gold we know. And here we're getting details about the copper. And so there are many questions. What is going on here? What is behind the scenes? What's the rest of the story? So I just want to point out to you that Rabbeinu Bachaya maintains that all of the other things that the woman had brought, the personal effects, they were all gold. Nobody had silver jewelry. I once heard that people call silver poor man's gold. So they heard, okay. So everybody was wealthy. Nobody had silver rings. Nobody had silver jewelry. Everybody was gold, bedecked in gold. The only thing they had that was copper was the mirror that they used in the makeup bag, because the mirror had to be of a shiny surface. But didn't have to be gold. So people had copper mirrors. And these copper mirrors did not take from the Mitzrayim. These copper mirrors were theirs to begin with.
When you mean copper mirror, meaning like the frame, or?
If you go to the Royal Ontario Museum, you'll see mirrors from that period. And they don't have a piece of glass which is attached to a wood or plastic handle like we have today. They have actually, it's all made of one material. It has a shiny surface, and that's what where you see a reflection. But it's like a single material. You can actually see Maris at service if you go there. Maybe nicer ones than they had, maybe bejeweled ones. But and the question, of course, is what is going on here with this business of these mirrors? What is this? The Sephardim says this is the only real copper that the people brought individually. People didn't have copper. They had silver, they had gold. It's a little bit of copper. So this is the copper they brought. And the Ramban tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu was very uncomfortable taking this. Rashi tells us, Ramban tells us, everybody tells us. We're going to hear about Moshe Rabbeinu's discomfort with this Maris HaTzeves. Why was he uncomfortable? So it says that this is because it was used for Yetzirah purposes. It was used to create interest, not in necessarily davening or learning, you know. In a different part of the human condition. So the Ramban asks, so what? We heard about the jewelry. And what was the jewelry made for? No, you don't like Yetzirah?
Ornaments.
That's Rashi's verbiage, it's not my verbiage. The Yetzirah serves a purpose. Yetzirah serves a purpose. Desire and lust is not a neshama thing. It's a body thing. It's a body thing, it's a Yetzirah thing. So it has to be harnessed and channeled and used, but it's not naturally a good thing. It's not naturally a fantastic thing. If a person has more of such a drive, you don't say, wow, he's so holy. They have a huge sex drive. Wow, what a tzaddik. Unbelievable. Okay. Right? So It is like it's a harder thing. It appeals to a very, very fleshy side of human existence, right? There's a more exalted side, and then there's a more base side. So Ramban said, what do you mean? Well, the jewelry was also sold. So he says the gold all got mixed in together. He didn't know what gold was. He said a gold aron. You didn't say, oh, I see my chastity belt, the woman said. I see it. It's right there. It's in the cherubim. Everything was melted together, and it was. But he said when it came to these mirrors, the mirrors were hammered out in a way you could actually see the mirrors. It wasn't melted down. The mirrors were hammered together. They were brought together in a hammered fashion, but basically it did not entirely lose its original imagery. You could kind of identify where things had come from. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, what's going on here? You're going to have makeup mirrors like in the Mishkan? In the laver? Like, how's that going to work? The Oznayim Loteri kind of develops the Ramban's ideas, and he says, everything was melted down. Everything's melted down, he says. The only thing that was very clear, you could actually still see what it was, so that was this concept of the mirrors. Let's take a look in Rashi. Rashi says something quite remarkable. B'maris HaTzeves. Why is it that we hear now suddenly about these mirrors, and what are Maris HaTzeves? Says Rashi, B'nei Yisrael hayu b'yadan maris. The Jewish women had in their possession mirrors. Shadayas ben, what are mirrors? Once upon a time, people don't know what a mirror is, by the way. In Europe, people didn't have mirrors, especially poor Jews living in a little village somewhere. They didn't have mirrors. They never saw a mirror in their life. So Rashi tells you, a mirror is a thing that you can see yourself in. Kishahim miskashte, so why would they use that for? When they would apply makeup or beautify themselves. Va'af oison, and these mirrors, lo ikvu, they did not restrain. Milahavi l'nidves ha-mishkan. These mirrors were also brought to the Mishkan for the purpose of building Hashem's house. Why? Why was Moshe, how did Moshe react? V'hoya moyes Moshe behen. Moshe recoiled from them. He was unhappy with this. He's like, what are you bringing? Why? V'pnei sha'asuyim l'yetzer hara. Because they're made for a yetzer hara. Let me give you an example. If you go to Kever Rachel, you'll see there's a very unusual pareches on the curtain on the Aron Kodesh there. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. If you look closely, you'll see that the pareches is a wedding gown. What's the story of the wedding gown? There was Rachmana Litzlan in the 90s when the monsters, the hashtag peace partner monsters, were busy blowing up Jews. There was a girl who was sitting, went out for dinner with her father the night before her wedding. Mm-hmm. And she was killed by a suicide bomber. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they took the gown that they had prepared for this girl's wedding and they made it as a pareches on the Kever Rachel. In general, Kever Rachel is a very emotional place. People oftentimes are moved to tears there. And when you know the story of that gown, and you look at that gown, it only adds to the already very emotional kind of, you know, way Kever Rachel shakes you up. Okay, so that makes sense. Do you think it would be reasonable to use lingerie as a pareches? I don't think so. I think it would be kind of strange. You see, you know what? We wanted pareches, you know, as a wedding gown, but you also want to decorate it with lingerie. Okay, like lingerie is important, but it doesn't belong in a pareches. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says. Maybe these mirrors over there for. I mean, it doesn't belong in the Beis HaMikdash. It's very nice. Use your makeup, you know. But what are you bringing this to me for? And Moshe recoiled. And you don't like my verbiage, but it's Rashi. Mepnei sha'asuyim l'yetzer hara. Not for the woman's yetzer hara, for the man's yetzer hara. It's made for a yetzer hara purpose. Omer le'akadosh Baruch Hu. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, Kabel, accept it. Why? I should accept it. Says the Eibishter, says God, Ki elu chavivin olai min hakol, because this is the most precious donation I got. More than anything else. This donation, I value more than everything else they brought. Why? It didn't cost the most money. It wasn't the biggest sacrifice. It's much harder to give away gold jewelry than give away a mirror and a makeup bag. Why? Why was it so precious to God? So the Medrash, speaking in God's voice, continues and says, because sha'al yadayhem hamidu hanoshim tzvois rabbis. It's through these mirrors, with the aid of these mirrors, that the women in Egypt were able to establish a nation. in Mitzrayim. And Rashi gives us a very interesting kind of backstory. When the husbands would come home in the evening, totally spent, wiped out and exhausted. So these women would come and they would welcome their husband back from the slave fields, from the killing fields, from the horrors of the day. And they didn't go back to barracks like in Auschwitz. They lived in a ghetto. They lived under miserable conditions, in squalor, but, you know, they had family homes. Umeliches lahem, they would bring them maichol umishta. They would bring them food and drink. Umachilas neisan, they would feed their husbands. Veneitlas hamaris, each one would take their mirrors. Vechal achas raya atzmo embayla b'mara. It would be kind of like they would be playful with the mirror. They would look at themselves, look at their husbands in the mirror. And they would do this to stimulate some kind of interest. Umishtadalte b'dvarim leiman, ani namimcha, I'm prettier than you. It's very unusual medrash, unusual Rashi.
It's not hard when they're missing limbs.
Who's missing limbs?
The men, like, they were all in their labor.
I don't know if they were missing limbs, but they were certainly beaten down to a pulp. Exactly. Right? And, right, so this is like, Rashi's describing like foreplay to you, mamish, like. So this would eventually cause some kind of interest, some kind of excitement. I guess you would call this libido within their husbands. And so they would eventually cohabit as a result, and they would become pregnant, and that's how they had babies there. This is the meaning, one of the meanings of the pasuk found in the 8th chapter of Shir HaShirim that says, Tap tachas hatapuach oirarticha. Under the apple tree, I turned you on. I mean, that's literally what it means. So, in other words, this is really a maimer of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Knesset Yisrael. That God's, it's all a metaphor. It's all a metaphor of relationship with God and the Jewish people. But here it's understood almost, you know, quite literally. V'zeu shenemar b'mares hatzeves. That's why it's called Mares Hatzeves. Why Mares Hatzeves? Maris HaTzeves, that with which tzeves, with which groups of the Jewish people, with groups, troops of children, a nation was created. So God said to Moshe, you're disdaining these mirrors? There wouldn't be a Jewish nation without these mirrors. These mirrors are the most precious thing to me. It's with these mirrors that these women used to be able to create families. And Rashi says, very interestingly, V'nasa hakir mehem, the kier, the wash basin, was made of them. Why the wash basin? Shahu lasam shalom bin ishla ishti. The kier is what was used, the mechanism used to bring about marital peace between husband and wife when there was suspected adulterous or suspected foul play. So lahashkes mimayim shebeteichai, they would drink from the water inside the kier. Lemi shekinala, for the one who had become incensed with jealousy and suspected adultery and so on and so forth. So kinala by love and nistara. And then there was compelling conditions that seemed to indicate that things were not the way they should be. And Rashi says, I want you to know that this is literal. V'teidalacha, you should know. Shehein, mares, mamash, that this literally means mirrors. It's not some kind of euphemism. It's not a hyperbole referring to something else. It's literal. It literally means mirrors. And the mirrors, and that was what actually was used to make the kier. And we know this because Shaharei Nemar, it says later on in the Psukim when we get to Pakudi, the accounting, it says, V'necheshes ha'tnufa shivim kikar, that the copper that had been gathered, that had been given, was 70 kikar, v'yaspa, and they did so on and so forth with it. V'kier v'kane lehuskudisham, and the kier v'kani is not mentioned, and from this lamadato shlehoyo necheshes shokir min necheshes atnufa, that this was not like the rest of the copper. There was the copper that everybody donated that was melted down or smelted and used as metals are used. The copper, the mirrors were used differently. Kach doresh Rabbi Tanchuma. This is the way Rabbi Tanchuma expounded these verses. V'chein tirgum unkel, as Rashi says, unkel says the same thing. He says, what's maris atzeves? He says, Machazias Nishaya, the mirror of the woman. V'hu targum shomaris. And in case you still don't get it, Rashi uses a French word that for a change I can understand. He says, miroir. Mirwa. See, I don't read it as mirwa. I just read it as miros. That's just miros. It's close enough to English. This is finally useful for me. Right? And we find also something similar in the verses of Yeshaya, that amongst the different accoutrements or the things that were taken from the woman over there, it says, "V'hagil yoinim," which means mirrors, "metarge minon umachazaya." So we see that it means mirrors and asher. What's asher tzavu then? Maris hatzavu. What's tzavu? So tzavu is lahavin edvas, and tzavu comes from collecting. So they created collections of children, troops of families, and now these mirrors were collected and they were offered to the Beit Hamikdash, to the Mishkan. And Moshe Rabbeinu did not want to accept them, and God says, "Take it. This is more precious to me than anything else that was built, anything else that was given. Make sure you use those mirrors to build the Kir and the Kane." So how did Moshe get it so wrong? Isn't Moshe like one with God? And doesn't Moshe, no human being was ever closer to God than Moshe? How come Moshe was disdainful until God came along and said to him, no, this is good? Or, in different language, what was Moshe thinking? What was Moshe thinking? So of course we don't know what Moshe was thinking. You can ask Moshe when Mashiach comes. But here's a good chance that this is what Moshe was thinking. The Rebbe has this wonderful rumination. It's the last teaching on Parshas Vayakel. And he explains what Moshe was thinking and what God was telling him, and the lesson that we all learn from it. Page Shin Pei Gimel, which is Simen Chav Beis. The Rebbe sets out here to bring about a clarification, to shine light, a bir oimik ta'anosish on Moshe, to understand the profundity and the depth behind Moshe's approach, v'tshuvasish HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and conversely, God's response. Be'inyin ma'ilas nevuasish on Moshe. So let's first begin with a little bit of an analysis of the virtue of Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy vis-a-vis the other prophets. Okay, because always if you want to know what something's uniqueness is, you'll oftentimes frame it by other realities or create what they call contradistinction. So let's set this aside from other things. And when we're talking about prophecy, we have a very hard time defining. So what was Moshe's prophecy? Why do we have a hard time defining it? Because we don't know what prophecy is. So you go to a blind person and say, "Please explain the difference to me between yellow and red." How will the blind person explain it to you? Or better yet, how will you explain it to a blind person who never saw colors? One is light, one is dark. That's what you're talking about. All he sees never is dark. So we're talking about prophecy. We're in the dark here. We don't even know what we're talking about. So we have euphemism. We have description. And the best we can do to understand Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy or its uniqueness is by creating this contradistinction or framing it by what we know or are told about the other prophecies. So one of the things we're told about the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu, and this is taken from a Gemara in Maseches Yevamos on page 49, that it says, and this is a quote, "Kol ha-neviim nistaklu ba-aspeklaria she'ein me'ira." All of the prophets looked through a glass that wasn't translucent. How do you look through a glass that's not translucent? No, it's not see-through. How do you look through it? How do you see in a glass that's not transparent? How do you?
What do you mean?
Can't.
Of course you can.
What do you mean? You can see through a glass that's not translucent?
You looked in the mirror this morning?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it made of?
Sand, whatever.
Your mirror is made of glass. Your mirror is a piece of glass.
Glass, but you're asking at the core what the glass is made of.
I understand. The glass, I'm not asking what the glass is made of. It's glass. Glass. What's behind the glass these days? Paint. Silver paint. So it's glass that's not transparent. What do you see in that glass? A reflection. How do people in a submarine see?
The little window.
It's called a periscope. A series of mirrors. That the mirror reflection. It reflects the mirror until you can see. So, right, you never made a periscope in school, when, you know, like in fourth grade or something?
Yeah.
Put a mirror on top, mirror on the bottom, two mirrors, right? Look at the bottom and you can see what's going on top. Yeah, okay. So that's meaning that's a glass that's not translucent. In other words, they saw a reflection. They didn't receive the divine presence itself. They got a reflection of the divine presence. The divine presence itself, too intense. So they could see via something else. as if with an interruption. They weren't seeing it, they were seeing an image of it. Incidentally, there's a big question in halacha. If somebody sees something through a periscope, is he an aid? Is he a witness? Did you actually see it? Or you see a reflection of it? So the Navi doesn't see God himself. He sees, so to speak, God, but he sees the image of God as it's reflected through something else. Whether it was images that they got or a narrative. They're not seeing the word of Hashem directly. That was all the other Nevi'im. Moshe Rabbeinu nistakla bas peklai hamira. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to see through a translucent glass. In other words, he also couldn't see God and divinity himself. He also saw through some kind of barrier, but the barrier was transparent. So Moshe Rabbeinu was looking. He was looking through the window, whereas everybody else looking through a periscope. Or you would say, well, you sit when you're in the driver's seat, you can see what's going on in front of you. How? Look. And how do you know what's going on behind you? You have a rear view mirror. So you have the ability to look what's going behind you and in front, but in behind you, you're looking through a mirror. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the front, you're seeing things straightforward directly. Kilomer, in other words, Moshe Rabbeinu ra'a samahusa olikos, he saw the essence of divinity itself. Like somebody sees through a window, which means zuchuchis shkufa, a clear glass. Ve'ilu shor ha'nevi'im, the other prophets, they saw through a mirror that was not transparent. Like you said, how could you see through glass that's not transparent? And what's the answer? The answer is a mirror, a mara. Ela, shel amita shel davar. The truth is, though, b'chol achas mishnei eifanim, in both ways, the way of seeing through the front of the glass or the way of seeing through the rearview mirror, in both instances, Yeshmaila Achavere, one has a virtue on the other. How can it be a virtue in seeing something through a rearview mirror or a periscope? Baspeklar Yahameido, when you're looking through a clear glass, Hariya Humamashis, you're seeing things literally, you're seeing it. Riyas Mahus Hadavar Atzmai, I saw it. Abu Mitzad Sheni, but on the other hand, Sedei Hariya Shalom Mugbal, your field of vision is limited. You can only see what's in front of you. And when you don't have the mirrors, you have a blind spot. There's about 40 years ago, somebody created a mirror, which none of the car companies actually adopted. I guess they don't want to spend the money on it, but people used to install these mirrors themselves. A mirror that was a series of mirrors, not just a simple mirror, that actually gave you the ability to see in your blind spot too. Now, why the car companies never adopted it, I don't know. But today, new cars that are made have technology that beeps, or has a light going on in the car in your blind spot. So this is because the field of vision, the natural field of vision, is limited. We have direct vision, we have peripheral vision, and then, you know, some people have better peripheral vision, some people have weaker peripheral vision. One of the things the eye doctor tests you for is peripheral vision. And everybody has a certain area where it's beyond the peripheral vision and you can't see anymore. It's already in your blind spot, too much on the side. So the reality is that when you see things straightforwardly, you're seeing the thing itself, but your field of vision is limited. Adam yachalides bem tzuusa rak mashalafanav. You can only see what's before you. It's impossible to see, even though you have a clear glass in the back window of the car, you can't see through it, unless you drive looking out the back, and that's definitely not a good idea. Baspekaya she'eini mira, in a mirror, lo'umazos, hara'iyehu ishtakfas bovad. You're only seeing a reflection. However, you're not seeing the davar atzmei. Avali idr gisa, he ma'afsher es gamriyas hadvarim shema ocher. Thanks to the rearview mirror, I can see what's behind me. Because I have mirrors on the side of my car, I know who's pulling up on either side. Now, there still is a blind spots, perhaps, but with the help of mirrors, my field of vision is vastly enhanced. So there's the natural field of vision, a direct vision, but very limited. And then there's the expanded field of vision, which includes all kinds of things I wouldn't naturally be able to see with the use of mirrors. So the Rebbe says that this then is the meaning of the mahus, the essence of maris hatzeves. This is the meaning of the gathered mirrors. Bechinas aspeklaria she'ein yameira. This is the glass that's not translucent. This is the glass you can't see through. Maris Elu, these Maris Nasu li Yetzirah. They're made for the Yetzirah. What does that mean? Miyatzkes es hayecheles lides. It gives us the ability to see ulahachnes l'tchum hakdusha, to bring into the scrimmage of holiness gam masha me'ocher, also that which is behind, not naturally part of the field of vision of holiness. So the holy field of vision has a limited thing it's able to see, a limited perspective. But the mirror enables me to deal with the Yetzirah, the thing which is not in the natural field of vision. That too can be brought into the field of vision. That too can start to be seen. In other words, in proverbially speaking, metaphorically speaking, Games hadvarim anechusiv ha'ashvelim sheba'ilam, things which are the lowest common denominator, things which are not exalted, things which are not refined naturally. So that too can be brought into tandem with the serving of Hashem, sheyiskayim gam bohem v'shachanti b'seichem, that in them should also be fulfilled the concept of, and I will dwell amongst them. Lasisle is barach, to make for Hashem a dwelling place, b'tachtoinim, in the lowest possible level. And this, my dear friends, is the reason that Moshe Rabbeinu, he recoiled when he saw mirrors. He couldn't understand mirrors. Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu, who sees divine image itself, whatever that means, he sees straightforward. He's looking through the glass. He said, what are you bringing me a periscope for? What are you bringing mirrors for? I want to see the thing itself. My field of vision is things which are only naturally holy. That's my field of vision. And I'm not capable of looking into a mirror. Things that the divine revelation happens in a natural, straightforward manner. In other words, he wanted the Beis HaMikdash to be like a glass, to see the Eibishter like through glass. Gili Mehusa Lekus, he said the Beis HaMikdash is a window into heaven. It's a window. The eyes are windows of the soul. The Beis HaMikdash is a window. Hashem says about the Beis HaMikdash, Vayel Eini V'libi, my eyes will be there. It's a window. So what do we find out? We find out that Moshe Rabbeinu said, but there's going to be things missing in the field of vision if it's a window. So what? He says, that's fine. So what? You don't need to see those other things. If it isn't already in the field of vision, it doesn't have to get into the field of vision. Leave it out. The V'shachanti B'seichem is in the natural field of vision where it proverbially belongs. HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers to Moshe, no. Elu chaviv olai min hakol. These are most dear to me. Tachlisa shel haMishkan, the ultimate person of the purpose of the Mishkan, is not to be merely a window to heaven, but rather to be an elevating device for earth. The transformation of the earthiness. Das peklayer she'einim ira. We need the mirrors here. We need the periscope. We need to be able to see in the rearview mirror, because things in the rearview mirror are closer than they appear. To you, it seems far away, but really it's not. Really, it's closer. It's not that far from being used for a holy purpose. Shetichlal gam es hadvarim anechusim shabaylam. The lowest realities, they can also become elevated and be made part of Hashem's dira, Hashem's dwelling place. And even things which are made for, so to speak, yetzirah, that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. That's where He wants. That's where Hashem's dwelling has to be. Kasher mishtamshim dafke bedvarim atachtoinim letzorchei kedusha. When a person uses the lowest things, the most ordinary things, the most mundane things, for a holy and a sacred purpose, like these mirrors, these makeup mirrors, then you create the most extreme Mishkan makeover. The most extreme Mishkan makeover is not when you take that which is naturally beautiful and holy. When you take that which otherwise would not be naturally beautiful and holy, and you go from that extreme and you make that over into holiness, this is the mirrors that the woman brought, and this is why Moshe Rabbeinu initially couldn't understand. And the message that God conveys to him, which is extremely relevant and meaningful and important to us. How many times I come to the person who says, put on film, and says, Rabbi, I do that in shul. I do that in shul. We're in an airport here. What are you talking about? We're in the middle of a store over here. So what do you think, God is not here? Oh, I believe God's everywhere. Don't tell me. I said, so why don't you put on film today? Oh, I got busy. Okay, so I said, I have film in my hand. Let's do it here. The notion that religion, God, spirituality, it belongs in a shul. It belongs in the natural line of vision. It doesn't belong out there. Don't bring these things over here. But the truth is, they're wrong. It's a well-intentioned mistake. Even Moshe Rabbeinu made this mistake. but God told him otherwise. The truth is that things in the rearview mirror are closer than they appear to be. And our task is to bring them from the back, proverbially, into the front, that they too should become a dirul yisbarech, a dwelling place for Hashem in our world.